think it's great when there are organizations like Eats Place and others that can help, can hold your hand, can help you understand what the options are, what the possible solutions are, and then help you problem solve about this one makes sense for me, but that one doesn't, or it's too soon or too late, or whatever the case is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's great that you are also a connector like me, because, you know, 90% of food businesses fail in the first year, but if they do succeed, what are they going to do? You know, you can't white knuckle your way through the next 5 years. You know, you have to have a growth strategy, a plan. So it's really good that they can partner with organizations like ours.
Hi, I'm Heather Barnhouse, a partner at Dentons, Canada's global law firm. I am also the co-leader of the Venture Technology and Emerging Growth Companies Group in our Edmonton office, and serve as the national co-leader of our agribusiness group. Welcome to another episode of Women in Leadership and Entrepreneurship. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by Katie Chang, executive chef and founder of Eats Place. In this episode, we're going to dive into agri-foods and international expansions. Some of the themes we'll explore include trends in agriculture, in the developing technology world, the bigger implications that these have for the world, and how you get the title of executive chef and founder. Welcome, Katie. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Ni hao, hello, I'm Katie Chang.
How about you give our listeners just a little background about yourself personally, and also a little bit about Eats Place?
Sure. I am a daughter of immigrants, and because of language issues, when my parents came to the U.S., they started a restaurant in the Washington, D.C. area. And that's how I was D.C. born and raised, they call it, native Washingtonian.
And what's your educational background that was your personal background? You grew up in restaurants, you have that familiarity, but then you had a little diversion in your educational background before you came back to this space.
Yes, it was a very long and winding road. I went to art school, studied film, also went to law school, you know, as you do, right brain,
as
left
you do,
brain.
Yeah. Balance those things out.
That's right. But I always put myself through school by working in food. And that's how I started Eats Place.
Okay. Tell us about Eats Place.
Well, I started making award-winning hot sauce and I needed kitchen space to make it. So I ended up opening Eats Place. Fun fact, our corporate name is actually Baba's Cooking School. And Baba means dad. And really, it's all that my chef father taught me about cooking and life.
Oh, that's very sweet. Does he know this? Does he know that this venture is named after him?
He does. He finds it really funny because I always wanted to be a chef. I'm the daughter of a chef, and he really did not want me to be a chef. And now he says, if only Eats Place had been around when I was starting out, I really could have helped him.
That story must be that there was a problem waiting for a solution that is in Eats Place. Tell us a little bit about the niche that Eats Place works in and the problem that it's trying to solve.
Well, Eats Place is a community development financial institution, a CDFI. We're in Washington, D.C., and we have a farm just outside the city. We do business loans, venture capital, and technical assistance for farm and food businesses who might be underserved by traditional banks and institutions. So we have a food incubator and a restaurant / food retail accelerator lab, and Eats Place helps farms and other food businesses start up and grow.
Very fun. How big of a geographic reach do you have in and around DC? When you say, you know, farms kind of in and around that space and other entrepreneurs, how deep is that reach in the US?
We are in the Washington metropolitan region. So we our service area includes Washington, D.C., of course, Maryland, Virginia, and rural Appalachia. And we've worked with different farms around the country interested in carbon sequestration, permaculture, and things like that, really working on just ways that our food systems can improve our community economic development and just how to network. I'm a James Beard Foundation legacy mentor. So I mentor up and coming chefs and food producers and who want to get into the food business and grow.
And what do you see predominant, like everything that you just described? There's a lot of different verticals maybe in that in the bucket of things that you described. What do you see entrepreneurs reaching out for primarily? Like, is it for startup capital? Is it for mentorship? Is it for, technology that will help them do certain things? What are the themes or the trends of where entrepreneurs are seeking assistance?
I think it's everything you mentioned because if we only gave capital, people without financial literacy skills, without management skills, might not be able to use it. So, a little bit of money can be a dangerous thing if you're not able to use it wisely. So, of course, we do the technical assistance for financial literacy, help them with their business operations and things like that.
Very interesting. I think this, as a general rule, I'm sure there are exceptions, but I think the education system isn't great about teaching financial literacy, generally. And so, as you say, if you don't have those skills or you haven't learned them in maybe some other formal education, a little money could be a really dangerous thing for people who don't know exactly how to manage it. So, it's great that you're combining the resources in terms of, financial tools, but also the educational piece and the operational support, so that people aren't left with a tool that they are not able to deploy in a responsible way. And what a great way to, ensure a better possibility of payback for a financial instrument, but to teach people how to manage it.
Yeah, I mean, you make a really good point. Food is really an excellent way to access entrepreneurship because there aren't these barriers. Like my parents face these barriers like language, technology, or even startup costs if you partner with an incubator. But you can get all of those business lessons through food, without any barriers.
Food is something that everybody needs, right? Like, it doesn't discriminate that only this section or segment of the population needs it or is interested in it. It's obviously something that is table stakes for everybody every day.
Yeah, and it's such a wonderful way to bring people together. Like you said, we all need it, and our differences melt away at the table when we all sit down together.
It's true. So, as a chef, do you have a favorite dish that you like to serve if you were having a meal with friends?
Yeah, I love cooking with all my friends. So I love making dumplings with everyone. So we get together way before it's time to eat and we make dumplings together and it becomes this really collaborative, communal, fun party.
Oh, that's very sweet. And have you done this with staff as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think many businesses think of their staff as family, and especially through in the food industry. So we love our staff meals. One thing I really love is when staff from all different diverse backgrounds are cooking and they show me what they like to eat at home. I like getting that glimpse of their lives.
Yeah, that's very fun. And it is something, you're right, that people can bond over, because what might be, delicious in my culture or some a favorite food of mine, you may never have tried, and vice versa, right? So what a great opportunity to learn and to share those customs and cultures.
For sure.
So how long have you been in business in Washington?
Oh my goodness. We opened in 2012. So,
Oh,
yeah, 12 years.
12 years. Wow. So you've been in business for 12 years and you've got some traction and you've got some customers and you've got a farm, you've got lots of things in place. And now you're thinking, about a little international expansion to our favorite province of Alberta. Tell me why you're thinking of expanding and why Alberta was on the short list of places to come to.
Yeah, I mean, Alberta is so exciting. It's the place to be. I see so many opportunities here. It is. There are so many opportunities in Alberta. And it's funny, when I was visiting, I've been to Alberta quite a few times when I was a kid and growing up. But just recently, when I visited, I was driving around and echoes of my Appalachian farm came through. Like, the mountains are in the west. Yep. The cities are within a couple of hours, the same native produce. So I just thought there were so many similarities. I was like, is this meant to be? How strange.
It is strange. I wouldn't have necessarily expected that. So you came and you toured and you saw some familiarity, some places. What about the ecosystem? What differences or similarities in the ecosystem? So around, creating incubators, around the financial piece, around the mentorship, what are the things, the trends that you're seeing, the differences between what you have established, you have had established now for 12 years versus what you're hoping to get established? What do you think? Will it be the same? Will it have to run a little bit differently? Will the opportunities be the same? What do you think on that front?
I think it'll be a lot the same. We've learned a lot of lessons and have a lot of procedures in place in the last 12 years, but obviously it's a new place, so it will be different and tailored to its place. And I think that's what's so amazing about food and its connections. It is so based on its place in time. Yeah, our farm actually is a second growth forest. And before that, it was farmland before it got wild. And before that, it was a native grassland. So when you peel the layers, more and more similarities start emerging with Alberta.
Interesting. And what about the ecosystem around entrepreneurship in Alberta? Are you like, it's great that the land and the food and all of that, but what about the supports for, for startup companies coming into this province? There is a lot of supports available, but I think that sometimes people find them a little bit hidden. So the message might not be out there. Is that something you've experienced, or has it been a welcoming community to start this type of venture?
It's been both. It's been amazingly welcome, which is how I've come to meet you and Denton. Right. So that was great and amazing. Just people putting us together, whether it being the local government of Red Deer County or like the larger provincial government of Alberta. That's what's exciting, this sense of entrepreneurship and growth in Alberta that is different and a market improvement in the level of support that you can get as a business. The diverse population, both regions are very diverse, both have a strong sense of community. Alberta and Washington have these tight-knit neighborhoods, and there's a spirit of entrepreneurism, a spirit of doing community development. And for a thriving food ecosystem, you really need to have that sense of people and place that we were talking about, and that relationship to the land. You need to have that love. So both are these natural resource-based economies, and they're both diversifying through technology, education, energy, and tourism. That's all a part of it. And on top of that, they both have really strong local food movements. So not just about sustainability goals, but true regeneration. And the difference I see with Alberta in particular, contrasted with the Washington region, is how much collaboration there is and support. And I feel like, yeah, and you're right. I feel like it is hard for someone who's just trying to start out their business to access all those resources. And maybe that's where Eats Place can come in and help be that liaison and connect all these resources, all that funding, with someone who is struggling just to start their business. Because if you're starting a food business, you're worried about buying inventory from the grocery store or from the warehouse. You're not worried about seeking operating capital necessarily. I mean, you have to be focused on both, but at the end of the day, customers are hungry and you have to feed them.
Yeah, no, you raise a really good point. And I think certainly the work that I do with entrepreneurs, and this would be those that are in sort of that hospitality space or the agri-food space, or maybe some spaces that are adjacent to that, and more broadly, like it could be wildly different. They often, there are seeds of availability. There are certain seeds where they can very easily find what they're looking for. They can, you know, access certain resources, and it gets them so far. And they think this is great, and I'm now connected, and there's some programs, there may be some grant funding, there's some things that are available. And so they quickly burn through those things. And then they kind of sometimes get to a point where they're like, okay, what's next? I don't know. It's not obvious to me what's next on the pathway. And if they aren't connected to, you know, some incubators or some people who've done this before or some mentors, they can get stuck. They can get out of the gate and then not exactly know where to go. And that's one of the criticisms that I hear often from entrepreneurs, is that it's easy to start up, easy to, you know, have a business plan, easy to, you know, find a banker, for example. But then when the banker asks you some skill testing questions, like, what could I take collateral in if I'm going to give you a loan? Oh, you're going to eat that food tomorrow? Well, that doesn't make very good collateral. And so then they don't necessarily know the next step or the solution, you know, to that sort of commercial banking problem. And then they come to me and they'll say, like, what do you recommend? And I'll be like, oh, like, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Do you know this person? And often the answer is no. Like they just didn't even know that those things existed. And I think that's one of the challenges. And I know you and I've talked about this. It's one of the challenges is really one of navigation. Like you're on this unknown pathway, and how do you know what's coming? Like you're gonna need to make a bunch of decisions, but if you don't even know what the decision points are, how do you solve that problem? And I think it's great when there are organizations like Eats Place and others that can help, can hold your hand, can help you understand what the options are, what the possible solutions are, and then help you problem solve about this one makes sense for me, but that one doesn't, or it's too soon or too late, or whatever the case is. So I think there's a real opportunity and a real need in that space to help with that facilitation or navigation or coordination of the next step within what can be a very overwhelming path or process.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's great that you are also a connector like me, because, you know, 90% of food businesses fail in the first year, but if they do succeed, what are they going to do? You know, you can't white knuckle your way through the next 5 years. You know, you have to have a growth strategy, a plan. So it's really good that they can partner with organizations like ours, because a mom and pop startup, they're not going to have like an advisory board, right? But we can serve as their advisory board, and they can bounce off ideas from us. And we, like you were saying, that navigator, we can help them kind of get through the red tape and help them understand the system and how different players can help them reach their goals.
And one of the things that I have found, this is of course a generalization, but one of the things that I've found with entrepreneurs, whether they have had success stories or tragic stories in their pathway, they're so generous with their time and their mentorship and their lessons. And so if somebody will ask them a question, hey, I have this challenge, or I'm running into this roadblock, people are very happy to help you think about, you know, a brainstorming session to think about a solution, or to say, this worked for me, or don't bother with that because it didn't, or you need to be connected to this person. But it's not organic always. Like, so if you happen to stumble upon a great resource, people will be very generous with their time and help you out. But it's not formalized in a way that you, unless you happen to bump into the right person at the right time, it can be a lonely pathway, because it's not obvious where you find these people and, you know, all of those different pieces of the puzzle. And so one of the things that I think is brilliant about Eats Place is that it is the formalization of what people I think are genuinely happy to do, which is to connect and to help and to try to have other people enjoy some success and have it be just a little bit easier for them than it might have been for, you know, for the original person.
Yeah, I don't know people more big-hearted and generous than food people. And they are they're so open with their knowledge. They learned many hard lessons that they are happy to share with people, myself included. And it's just a matter of formalizing it, because it can't just be dumb luck, right? I mean, it makes for a
Yeah.
great startup story, but it has to
Sure.
be it has to be something that's a little systematized, so we can have these repeated successes. And I always say, though, there's such a high failure rate, and even if a food business ends up failing, I don't think they fail. They end up pivoting, right? Because when
Yeah.
you have that dream, you're a food person, you're always going to be a food person. We had a business that started out at Eats Place that was doing fast food, and that failed. They pivoted and they became a national CPG brand.
Wow, that is a pretty hard left turn, but yeah, those things can happen. You know, when you made the comment about how there's no sort of typical, or there's no person who's more kind-hearted and generous than people in the food business. One of the stories that I remember that was so impactful. So of course, restaurants and the food business and hospitality was so severely impacted by COVID right out of the gate, and then it's been a hard and long road back for many of those companies, many of those restaurants and food places in that industry still coming out of COVID. And one of the really heartwarming stories from a client of mine that has a restaurant was they were struggling. They opened up. They were trying to keep their staff. They were trying to do all the right things, and they were struggling. And so they put out a bit of a maybe a bit of a tongue-in-cheek social media post, and that really rallied the community. And there was people that were like, I can come and wash dishes. Like, I can just come and contribute. I don't know how to, I'm not a cook, I'm not a chef, I don't know how to do that, but I can wash dishes. And so they had all these people that they never would have expected that they would be willing to do those kinds of things, but they just believed in the community, they believed in the product, and they believed in the opportunity for people to gather and to share a meal, and they wanted to contribute. And the restaurant has survived. So that was a real pivot, a real turning point, and a real lesson in sort of the community aspect and the community building and what it can do to bring people together.
I think that is such a great story of people rallying together to save a business, because local money stays local, and that is
Right.
fantastic. And that's
Yeah.
actually, they did the smartest thing. They asked for help, and it is so hard for entrepreneurs to ask for help. And that's one of the things I do. I'm just like, off the bat, you need help and we can help you, because they have such, they're brilliant. They're so, these lone wolves that have these great ideas, and they don't need help. They got it, but they need help.
So if you're the entrepreneur who's in that spot where you're like, I need help, but I don't know how to ask for it. How do they ask for it? Like, if somebody comes to you, what are the magic words that you want to hear?
I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? So I look at their numbers and I can pretty much tell where they need help or how they need help.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm like, oh, show me your P&L, show me this, and they're like, what's a P&L? Red flag.
Oh yeah, that is a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but I
Yeah.
mean, beyond that, often it's just, like, people will let you know they need help in ways. They'll let you know if they're struggling, right? You can see it on their social media. You can see it
Yeah.
during their service. So, even if they don't explicitly ask for help, they need someone to toss them a lifeline, a ring.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I tell entrepreneurs, and again, this is a generalization, but I tell entrepreneurs, be generous when asking for help. So, and what I mean by that is, so if I came to you and said, like, I'm kind of, stuck, I really need some mentorship. If you're going to give that to me, I need to be really generous in how I receive that. I can't sit there and say, well, that was dumb advice, or that would never work, or this would never work. I just need to be open to all the things that are being offered to me. And of course, not everything is going to work for everybody, but people are really generous with their suggestions and really creative in the solutions that they can come up with, as long as you are really open to receiving that feedback.
I love that, because yes, we're offering to help, we're offering to give feedback, to coach, but we can't run your business for you, right?
And you have to be, I think that's one of the best qualities about entrepreneurs, and not all of them are, But if they are coachable, if they are willing to receive the advice they're asking for or the suggestion, they don't have to, of course, do everything. But if they are coachable and willing to try certain things, they can't fail. They can pivot many times, but they're not going to fail if they're coachable.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of being coachable is what they are already, being a self-starter and motivated, staying yeah. hungry, right? They have a sense yeah. they want to do something. They have a sense something is wrong and they want to fix it.
And they have some passion for it, right? Like it's not just a little bit of a passing fad. They've got some passion that this is a problem in the world that needs a solution.
Right, right. But they're pragmatic because passion doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah,
you have to be creative, sadly. But grounded in reality. It's a business, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the lessons for some entrepreneurs who take on projects as passion projects, but that aren't businesses. And so I think there is that opportunity to be really, you know, really focused and turn your passion into a business, but you got to want to do that, right? Like, as opposed to running it off the side of your desk or having it be a hobby and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep. There's always someone who has that food dream, a family recipe, special breed of livestock they're in love with.
Totally.
And, you know, they have that passion, but what's the difference between a hobby and a business? Are they able to start it and thrive with a team and keep growing?
I agree. So, ideal client or candidate to work with Eats Place, is there a stage of business or all stages of business as long as you're on that growth path?
Really all stages. We have worked with pre-startups, startups and medium-sized businesses. That's where we really add a lot of value, but we've worked with very large businesses as well. So long as they're willing to ask for help and take the criticism and be flexible, like we talked about, and really like put in the work, because we can help them and coach them, but they're really going to have to also pick up the ball.
Yeah, it has to be a two-way street, right? This is not a one-way offering. There needs to be some willingness on both sides.
Yeah, and I think it's like a lot of it is just kind of showcasing the resources that are out there. And it starts like pinging off these ideas that they had that they never really had before. I was working with someone who sells fresh fish, a fishmonger, and she hadn't really thought about canning her fish. I mean, so she, and the fact that we have a cannery, she was like, that's a resource I can use. So sometimes it's just a matter of showing people all these resources that are out there,
right?
And they're so creative, they can make the connections of how their business can use that resource.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, that wouldn't be intuitive, but now that you say that, like, of course it's intuitive, right? Like you just need to be shown that this is an option. And then you can think about 10 different ways that you could incorporate that into your practice or your business.
Yeah. And I wasn't even thinking about, I'm like you, I wasn't really thinking about that specifically for her business. I was just sort of generally talking because her business was a completely different model. It's like a restaurant model. So, but I'm great. I'm so happy that she can get into that vertical.
Yeah, interesting. What do you think the timing is for Eats Place to be in Alberta?
I would love to get there as soon as possible and visit more often. There's just a lot of opportunity there. And Alberta's more laid back than DC for sure, but I love the drive of being there. Yeah, it's super friendly. I would love to be in Alberta as soon as possible.
Well, we are going to watch out for you and we're going to do everything we can to help make you viable in Alberta sooner than later, because I think it's a really exciting opportunity.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited to work with local farmers and food producers in Alberta.
Where in the meantime, as we're, you know, you're embarking on this path to Alberta, where can our listeners find out more about Eats Place?
You can follow us on social, on Instagram, we're Eats Place, and then our website, eatsplace.com.
And that's all one word, EATSPLACE.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you kindly for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us about you and about Eats Place and about the opportunities to connect with entrepreneurs and people in the food area. And we look forward to following and watching when you get here.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to Women in Leadership and Entrepreneurship to stay updated with our latest episodes. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and share it with others who might find it valuable. Until next time. Dentons is a global legal practice providing client services worldwide through its member firms and affiliates. This episode does not constitute legal or other advice. You should not take or refrain from taking action based on its content. Please contact a legal practitioner to obtain advice with respect to any legal matter. Please see dentons.com for legal notices.